From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. First of all, thank you so much for the courtesy that you extended to our guest host Friday night, Richard Serrett. You know, it's not easy filling in. Believe me, I know that. And he did a great job, and I appreciate your kindness there. Next hour, special report on the Mexican swine flu. As a matter of fact, the World Health Organization has raised its alert level over the swine flu from 3 to 4. Now, that is 2 steps short of declaring a full pandemic. A WHO assistant said that it has signaled a significant step towards pandemic influenza, but added, we're not there yet. Mexico said earlier it believed 149 people have now died from the swine flu outbreak, only 20 cases confirmed, 44 cases in the United States, no reported deaths there. And a team of scientists apparently predicted more than a year ago that Mexico and other tropical locales were emerging hotspots for diseases that jump from animals to humans. Getting it right on the newly reported swine flu, apparently, this week, the scientists are analyzing the patterns of the new swine flu virus's spread and trying to predict the next moves. The researchers should have preliminary findings by the weekend. Team leader Peter Duzak of the Wildlife Trust has said that to Live Science. Dr. Dean Adell earned his MD from Cornell University Medical School in 1967. He has his own nationally syndicated program called Dr. Dean Adell Radio, and here he is right now. Dean, is this getting blown out of proportion?
Oh, it's hard to say. I can't predict the future. At this particular point, sure. You know, media's going crazy. We've had 44 cases. They've all been mild. I think there's one hospitalization. Mexico City's pretty terrible, but we're kind of used to that also in other countries where people have lots of other infections and different immune systems. Sometimes the same virus will just wreak havoc, and here we kind of do okay. So it's hard to say, but flu is an important disease. In an average year, 35,000 people die from it in the United States, up to 500,000 people in the world. So we tend to take it for granted because it's just the flu, but it's a serious illness and always has been a little mutation, and we could have problems.
And like you say, you know, we've had 36,000 people die in the United States from the normal flu every year. Dean, if we had 5,000 people die from this strain, people would be going crazy.
Absolutely. I remember a couple of years ago where we just were tracking every death, and the news reports would come up today, 15 people died. Well, it's normal. It just sounds awful. And it's a bit of a distortion. Nevertheless, you know, we've been set up with bird flu and with SARS,
yeah.
And here comes the swine flu. And, you know, we're worried if another mutation happens, it could make it worse. But you got to realize the mutation can happen to make it more benign also. So it's fairly unpredictable. And we at least, you know, we've been thinking about this because of bird flu. So we're not as unprepared as we could have been. It's not that we're as prepared as some other countries, but we have among the best scientists in the world on this, and we're keeping track of it. It's frustrating. There's only 2 labs in North America that can test and tell you if you have swine flu. That's a bit frustrating. One in Atlanta, one in Winnipeg, Canada. So there's a big time delay. And the other issue is, if you got your flu vaccine this year, are you protected? And to be honest with you, George, I can't get to the bottom of this. I've seen 3 reports that say you might be protected because in this year's flu vaccine, there was an H1N1, and this is that type, but there are subtypes to it. And some say, no, the current flu vaccine will not protect you. And if we had to make a vaccine, it's going to take 4 or 5 months to get it distributed. So what can I say?
All right, thank you. Dr. Dean Adell, his website, healthcentral.com. And I may very well be your guinea pig. As you know, I do not take the vaccine for flu. You do what you're going to do. But if they ever come up with one for the swine flu here, I'm not going to take it. A strong earthquake struck central Mexico just while they were all rattled over the swine flu. 5.6 magnitude, swaying tall buildings in the capital, sending office workers out into the streets. Talk about office workers who panicked today in New York. Oh, my. As a matter of fact, the White House Military Office Director, Luis Caldera, is apologizing for any panic caused by a flight mission and photo opportunity that looked like Air Force One and fighter jets were heading right toward the New York City skyline this morning. Caldera said he approved the mission last week. Federal authorities took the proper steps, he says, to notify state and local authorities in New York and New Jersey. But for people who work in the New York financial district, the event brought back nightmares of the 9/11 attacks. What they saw was the second version of Air Force One and military fighter jets flying very low, right over the skyline. People panicked all over the place. Not a very good idea. Pakistan's president says his intelligence agencies believe Osama bin Laden may be dead. But he added there's no proof. Other Pakistani officials and a U.S. counterterrorism official said they thought the al-Qaeda chief is alive. U.S. officials said that bin Laden is most likely hiding in the mountains along Pakistan's border with Afghanistan, in particular the lawless tribal regions. Reports of bin Laden's death or near captures have been all over the place for years, and he's been on the run since 9/11, only seemingly debunked by periodic audio and video recordings. He seems to pop up all the time. A man is being treated at a University of Iowa hospital after his son tried to cut out a pacemaker from his chest. The 32-year-old son was arrested for the attempted murder of his 63-year-old father. He hit him in the head with a flashlight, then a piece of firewood. Then he proceeded to cut a pacemaker out of his father's chest using a pocket knife. His father is resting in a hospital. Olin Corporation, which owns Winchester, says they posted a great increase in profit in the first quarter. Why? Because of demand for ammunition from commercial, law enforcement, and military buyers. And as you know, as we've reported, it's very difficult to find ammunition these days. But Winchester, through Olin, doing very, very good. More than 1,000 people defrauded out of about $70 million by a group of advertising folks who pushed the dream of home ownership in what turned out to be a nightmare Ponzi scheme, according to federal and Maryland officials. Five officers for the company based called Metro Dream Homes are accused of tricking homeowners into pouring money into the business with the promise that the revenue would be used to pay off their mortgages. The scheme ran from 2005 until October of 2007. General Motors could be majority owned by the federal government under a massive restructuring plan that will also see 21,000 U.S. factory jobs cut by next year and phase out the Pontiac brand. The plan, which includes an offer to swap roughly $21 billion in bond debt for GM stock, would leave current shareholders holding just 1% of the century-old company, which is fighting for its life in the worst auto sales climate in 27 years. Daimler has reached an agreement with Chrysler and its owner to simply sell out its remaining 19.9% stake in the company, and they are going to forgive a $1.5 billion loan that they made as well. Ms. Shedlock with us, our investment advisor, sort of, is on the line with us. Well, it looks like things are changing in the automobile industry, Mish.
Yes, they are. The clock is ticking for GM. They have till June 1st to reach an agreement outside of bankruptcy court, and it really doesn't look likely. The administration is giving GM bondholders, offering GM bondholders right now 10% equity in GM. The total equity in GM is worth $1.25 billion. The bondholders have $27 billion in debt that's owed to them. That's less than a half of a percent. So it looks like to me that the GM bondholders, at least on this deal, would you take a half a penny on the dollar? I think I would take my chances in bankruptcy court to get nothing. So that's what it looks like it's going to happen. In the meantime, there's some other interesting deals that are coming out here. We want to know who's on the other side of credit default swaps. In other words, who stands to benefit if GM goes bankrupt? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm kind of suspecting perhaps J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup by any chance. So we'll see. Some in Congress are asking who's on the other side of those. The United Auto Workers would get 39% of GM's equity. That's only worth in exchange for $10 billion in bonds or $10 billion in obligations. That's only worth $488 million. So, and then what happens to the other $10 billion of GM's obligations? One of two things has to happen. Either the taxpayers have to pony up another $10 billion, or the UAW gets cheated out of what it's been promised.
Times are a-changing, Mish. Mish's blog, you can find him. Just search him, M-I-S. You'll see what he does. For the first time since the Apollo era, NASA's testing a new moonship in the turbulent waves of the open ocean. The life-size mock-up of the Orion crew exploration vehicle, NASA's replacement for its retiring space shuttle fleet, is undergoing a series of water landing trials this month in the Atlantic Ocean off the eastern coast of Florida. They are the first ocean tests of a full-size NASA spacecraft since the Apollo capsule's development in the 1960s. During the tests, teams of divers and engineers are practicing recovery techniques to retrieve an Orion capsule after splashdown. Now, there are some within NASA who don't like this new moonship. So we'll see what happens. I'll tell you one thing I do like, and that's actor Stephen Root. He has entertained millions of us for a long time on television and in film. As a matter of fact, his portrayal of Milton in Office Space is an all-time classic.
Well, I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume from 9 to 11.
Yeah, no, I know you're allowed to. I was just thinking maybe like a, you know, personal favor.
Well, I told Bill that if Sandra's going to listen to her headphones while she's falling, then I should be able to listen to the radio while I'm collating. Uh-huh. So I don't see why I should have to turn down the radio because I enjoy listening at a reasonable volume.
Thanks.
From 9 to 11.
Excuse me. Yeah, I believe you have my stapler.
Now, Milton, don't be greedy. Let's pass it along and make sure everyone gets a piece.
Hey, but last time I didn't receive a piece, and I was told that
just
I
pass.
The cake. There's lots of cake, but there's many people. They rate you up, people.
In a moment, Stephen Root in the studio live right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Stephen Root with us, Emmy Award-nominated actor, one of the most prolific character actors, principally known for his work in comedy, but he has won acclaim as well in dramatic roles. Among them, Stephen had a recurring role on the final two seasons of West Wing. You may remember his voice as part of the animated television series King of the Hill. And, of course, that clip that I played where he played the part of Milton in Office Space. Here he is in the studio of Coast to Coast. Milton!
Well, thank you for having me here. Enjoyable, George. Thank you.
Pleasure. You know, we have loved your work for years, and it's really a treat for us to meet you.
So you've been drinking?
A lot. Heavily. Heavily.
Thank you so much.
How did you get your start? You're a Midwestern guy.
Midwestern kid who ended up going, I was like... in Glen Rock, Wyoming, you know, population 5,000 maybe, right outside of Casper, yeah. And then little towns, Muncie, Indiana, Sioux City, Iowa. My dad was in construction, so he built steam power plants, and they'd finish them every 2 years. We go to the next one. But the last one I ended up in after 2 years of high school in Kansas City was in Vero Beach, Florida. So at that time, in 1970, it was fairly cheap to go to a state school, so I went to UF in Gainesville.
Sure.
And actually started out in journalism for a couple of years, and then got bit by the bug, and here we are.
Did you do the high school plays, and did you go through that?
You know, I didn't. I did a high school play, but had no aspirations in that area at all until I was a junior in college. Then I... that's really when I got bit and said, I can do this. I'm still waiting for the theater police to come and say, that's enough. You've had it. That's all. Time to go. But hasn't happened.
How do you like being the character actor? Because your roles have been funny. Couple dramas, but
I mean, you are hilarious. Were you always funny growing up?
No. You know, I was always the shy sci-fi nerd guy. But I think actually moving from place to place kind of helped. You had to develop friends quickly. And I think that actually helped later on as I became an actor boy. It really helped me in the profession.
What have been some of your favorite parts in the roles you've played?
Well, you know, some of my favorite stuff has been, I didn't really do any film or TV till I was in my late 30s. I did all theater in New York, Broadway, off-Broadway. Probably one of my favorite things I did right before I got to L.A. was I did 2 years on the road with Driving Miss Daisy. I played the part of Booley, the son. I did that with Julie Harris and Brock Peters. So that's working with the best stage actors of a generation.
Yeah, you saw that all.
I was thrilled with that. But, TV, I'd have to say King of the Hill and News Radio were really breakouts for me that I loved doing. And film, it was probably the any of the Coen Brothers stuff. Love the O Brothers.
They love you, by the way.
I love them. Yeah. I love them, Joel and Ethan. I'm giving them a hug right now. But, gosh, you know, there's so many things, and I feel so lucky to have worked with a lot of great people.
Is it difficult to create the character that you ultimately end up being, as you did in Office Space? And you also were in Star Trek The Next Generation. You were a Klingon, weren't you?
I was a Klingon. I was a Klingon, and I was in an episode a couple of episodes that Spock actually guest starred on.
That's cool.
Which was very cool. I'm like you, I suppose, looking forward to the new Trek film.
Yeah.
Very much, because I've always been a Trekker and a fan.
We had Bill Shatner on, and they did not invite him to be in that movie, and I think he was a little miffed about that.
Yeah.
I think they should have.
I mean, if they can, I think Leonard's got a bit in it, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I think he does.
Yeah.
So, I don't see why, but I'm looking forward to it.
I was in St. Louis for a few weeks, part of my hometown, and George Clooney was there filming a movie, and he was there for weeks. And I mean, and the city just went nuts with him.
Oh,
you worked
great
with him in Leatherheads, right?
Yeah, I worked with him in O Brother. I worked with him in Leatherheads, and I got to do his partner's new movie. Grant Heslov directed this one, his producing partner, called Men of Stared Goats. Which is I would think would be a great topic for your show.
Yeah.
Which is, about the psychic armory of the early 80s.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In Office Space, one of the funny parts, of course, was the clip we just played about the swing line stapler. And you were telling Tom that you sign some of them once in a while.
Almost every day.
Somebody comes up to you with one of those?
Well, you know, whatever I'm doing, whether it's a show like this or going to some studio or anything, there's always seems to be somebody there with a red stapler, and I got to say, it's great. I mean, I'm so happy people connected with that character. Love it.
What are you working on these days, Steve?
Well, I've done a, like I said, I just did that George movie, The Men of Stared Goats. I finished a new Sam Jackson thriller called Unthinkable.
And that's coming out sometime this year, right?
I think it's the end of the year.
Okay.
The end of the year. It's about a black ops torturer. Sam plays a torturer. Michael Sheen plays the torturee. It's some heavy-duty stuff, you know.
So very serious role this
very
time.
Very serious role. Yeah, I'm Sam's facilitator in that. I got to do a real fun thing with Gore Verbinski. He's doing a new animated movie. With Johnny Depp, and we all, a bunch of character actors, got together, and we're, that's something that probably won't come out till 2011. But
how do you like the animation? Like King of
the
Hill.
Love the animation. I mean, they're two different animals, the film and the TV one. The TV one, like King of the Hill, we're all there pretty much at the same time, in like you are in the studio in a U with microphones doing a script. Maybe doing each scene three times and then doing pickups that way. But if you're doing a film animation thing, you usually do it in 4-hour blocks and you're just there by yourself.
Right.
And it's harder, because obviously acting is reacting. You're reacting to your partner, and you can't do that. In these 4-hour blocks, you kind of have to think of what the response would be and respond to yourself. So it's a more difficult process.
When you do these characters, is it difficult for you to have to get back into that mode weeks later, let's say when you do it again? And what happens if you forget the voice?
That's a good question. They actually do give you some kind of a temp. They'll record that and they'll play that back for you right beforehand.
So
if it's something you haven't,
yeah.
So if you haven't had that one locked in, of course, King of the Hill, we've done for 13 years, so that wasn't a problem.
Let's take some phone calls when we come back.
It.
All right, Stephen Root, our special guest, right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll give you the numbers in just a moment. Next hour, we'll start our special report into this swine flu scare. However, when we come right back, it's actor Stephen Root and your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. We've got Stephen Root with you here. And Stephen, of course, has got another movie coming up called Unthinkable with Samuel Jackson sometime in the late fall, maybe November-ish. And, of course, you know him from Office Space, News Radio, where you played the eccentric station owner, didn't you?
Well, it was great because you never knew whether that guy was an idiot or an idiot savant.
And the great voice in King of the Hill. It's a retired Marine sergeant, wasn't it?
Yeah. William Fontaine de la Tour d'Autrive.
Who's always depressed about something.
Yes.
Well, I guess everybody's depressed with his economic
climate.
Well,
you know, he never got a gal to actually hold on to for a while, so it would depress anybody.
He's down.
Yeah.
The glasses that you wore in Office Space when you played Milton, your eyes must have been 2 inches wide.
Well, I tell you, the lenses had to have been almost 2 inches thick, probably an inch and a half, that I had to wear contacts behind to be able to see at all. And then that necessitated no depth of perception whatsoever. So anything that I had to reach for, I had to practice that because I would miss it by 2 or 3 inches the first time, and then I would grab it and take it. But, I'd have to actually rehearse in those things.
How long did it take to film that part?
My part in Office Space?
Yeah.
I was only there for... Gosh, a couple of weeks and a half,
that's
2.5
long.
Weeks.
That's
yeah, we filmed it in Austin, where Mike was living at the time and still is. And we actually were able to go down there for a 10-year reunion a couple of months ago, see the film on the big screen with, 1,200 screaming people. It was great.
Hilarious.
It was so
it
fun.
Absolutely hilarious.
It was great for me to be able to sit back and watch actually all the other performances, Ron Livingston in there and Gary Cole, just beautiful stuff.
By the way, we need more of the space that you're sitting at right now. Would you move back a little bit more, Rust, even all the way to the back?
All the way to the back. All the way. Oh, yes. No, I was told. I didn't have to.
I love it. Let's go to some of the phones. You ready? Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, first-time caller, Tim. Welcome to Coast. You're with Stephen
Root. Hey, how you doing, Stephen?
Okay, Tim, how are you, man?
Hey, I wanted to talk to you about the Ocho. I got to say, I loved you in Dodgeball. That was a premiere performance. Thank you for that so much.
Well, thank you. I thank Ben for letting me do it with him. It was just a blast. Really had a good time.
Another classic. Cleveland, Ohio, we go. Michael, east of the Rockies. Michael, take it away.
Steve, hey, George.
Hi, Mike.
I got a question for you. Does it take a certain amount of talent to do you acting in cartoons?
None whatsoever.
I'm surprised. I don't have any talent. That's why I call talk shows.
Michael, it does. You've got to be just as good an actor in cartoons as you do in real life.
Well, I hope so. But, a lot of people say, it's a different thing doing animation. It's really not. I mean, you're doing a character, and your whole body does the character, whether or not, you see it or not. You hear the voice.
You were going to go into journalism for a while earlier.
Well, yeah, I was at the University of Florida for a couple of years considering journalism, but it didn't catch with me, and I took an elective, an acting class, and started doing acting scenes for student directors there and realized I could probably fake my way through that, and here we are.
And nowadays, when Stephen Root is called for part, I bet you don't even have to audition anymore. They just call you and say, "We got a part for you."
Well, I'm fortunate enough to get more offers than auditions these days. If I do audition, it's for It's for a director who is not familiar with the work, or some very big person who doesn't know, you know, the work so well. So I'm happy to go in and do it for him.
And Stephen, you know what you do? I don't know how many people tell you this, but what you do in your profession, you touch people's lives. You make them laugh, you know.
No, thank you, George.
And that's so important, I think, nowadays, to give people this opportunity of an outlet. And that's what you do for so many people.
Well, I appreciate that. I feel a responsibility for that as well at this late stage of my career. And so I'm trying to pick stuff that means something to me, something that's always something that's well-written and something I think people would dig.
Good for you. Next up, we go to California, west of the Rockies. Jason, go ahead.
Mr. Root, it's a pleasure. I love your work.
Thanks, sir.
I always thought that one of your more compelling dramatic roles was playing Richard Clark in The Path to 9/11.
Oh, thanks. I love doing that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know it got, kind of caught up in political controversy. I don't want to get you into trouble by having addressed that, but I was wondering if you could just talk about your experience on it, and whether you think it's ever going to see the light of day on DVD.
Well, you know, I think they have had a lot of trouble putting out a DVD. It was kind of, they didn't want to do it, and I don't know whether they will. I tell you what, I think there's some fantastic performances in it. I loved being able to do a historical character. I did one for Tom Hanks in From the Earth to the Moon, played Chris Kraft. Loved doing that. So it's always fun and interesting and informative to do somebody who's, you know, still alive and still with us.
That was a classic series, Earth to the Moon.
Oh, fantastic. Tom just did a great job with it.
Loved it.
Great casting, great, on kind of a shoestring budget, did an amazing job.
I think there were three parts, if I remember, right?
12.
12 parts.
12 parts.
Gosh, that's
yeah,
fantastic.
And I think they've put it out since the last couple of 3 years. They've put a new version of it. It's worth looking at.
All right, next up, let's go to Sedona, Arizona. Blair, you are on Coast to Coast. Hey, Blair.
Hey, thanks, George. Humor's the divine antidote to the exaltation of ego, eh?
Yeah, you got that right.
You got it, pal.
Hey, Mr. Root,
yes,
what
sir.
Insights can you relay while making Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you know, that might help Americans cope with the current economics? And I have a second quick question, if possible.
Okay. I love doing a period piece just as a character actor, because you want to go back and put yourself in those clothes and see how people lived. We shot it in Mississippi in the height of summer, and we felt the dust, we felt the pain.
Yeah. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Wow.
Oh, there are many. There are many.
There's so many good ones. I don't know. I love the one that's in the movie that I did with Clooney recently, The Men Who Stare at Goats, which is about the the psychic army that was played around with in the early 80s. I think that's a good one.
Absolutely. We've had many of those players who participated in that on
yeah.
the program,
yeah.
Stephen. And part of me thinks that it's still going on.
Well, I mean, it's going to get a lot more play once this thing comes out.
Absolutely. Let's go to Hickson, Tennessee. Blake, welcome to Coast around with us. Hey, Blake.
Hi, how are you, Stephen?
Pretty good, man.
I was calling to see what were, I guess, basically some of your funniest experiences on working with King of the Hill.
Oh, gosh.
That you can repeat on live radio.
That I can tell for real? I don't know. I tell you, we're very much like a family on that show. We've been together for 13 years. We've seen people grow up, have children. Pam Siegel Adlon, who plays Bobby on the show, was unmarried when we started and now has, you know, three grown teenagers and is married. And it's a very much family-like experience. But we just love doing the show. And as far as anything being strange or funny, I mean, we just had, I think the greatest thing that happened to me was I got to be Governor Ann Richards' boyfriend on the show. And she actually came in and did the show. I mean, recorded it with us live. It was fantastic.
How's Hollywood faring during this economic crunch?
It's tough, especially if you're not an established player. I would, if you're coming up now as an actor, it's very, very tough to find a juicy role because they're all being stunt cast, meaning they're all going to stars who have names,
people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's very tough
like when I came up in the early 90s, you could get yourself a good guest star role, get seen, and that would lead to other things. It's very tough to do now.
Is it difficult? One of the reasons they just don't want to speculate, they can't afford to lose, so they want to make sure they have some people of star
It's
power.
All economics, and it's also these entertainment companies are run by corporations who are looking at quarterly statements.
Absolutely.
So that's what it is. It all comes down to money.
Mark in Redford, Michigan. Mark, very close to where my cousins live. How are you?
Yeah, greetings from your old hometown, George.
Sure thing.
Mr. Rue, good to talk to you. I have a real quick question here. What was it like playing what amounted to the only gay vampire on True Blood that never really had a supernatural scene except for a really awesome death scene?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was so happy to be able to do something like that. It was a real stretch for me. To play somebody like that, and it was a difficult process because it was mostly head acting. As you know, I was tied up for the majority of the three episodes that I did, so it was challenging as an actor to make that interesting while you're completely tied up.
What was the moment of your career, Stephen, where it just hit you and you said, my gosh, this is really happening to me, where you started pinching yourself in the morning?
Oh, gosh. You know, for theater, it would be doing Driving Miss Daisy with Julie Harris. And for television, it would probably be doing the pilot of News Radio, which was, I think, working with some of the smartest, funniest people ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's go to Pasadena, California on the wild card line. Hi, John. You're up with us.
Oh, hi, George, Stephen.
Howdy.
Here I am turning on a show looking for UFOs, and here's Stephen Root.
What's that guy doing here?
Well, Stephen just came down from one.
Absolutely, completely got me sideways. Very wonderful surprise. I was wondering if you could say anything about your experience with Idiocracy, which I thought was just this side of being a Mike Judge satirical masterpiece. Maybe it is, but the studios knocked it around so much.
Yeah, it was a problem. I'll tell you what, I had a blast because it was like it was old home week for me going back to work with Mike on a film as opposed to an animated project. And it was, again, hugely fun to go back to Austin and film. So everybody there was familiar with everybody else. So it was old home week. It was tremendous fun.
Mike Judge is a genius.
I think so.
Yeah.
And he can talk to himself without, as you know, he can do Beavis and Butthead without stopping. He can do Hank Hill and Boomhauer, without stopping. It takes me a couple of seconds to change from Bill to, anybody else that I do on that show.
The Great Cornholio. Let's go to London, Ontario, Canada, east of the Rockies. Hello, Brad. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, Mr. Norrie?
Great.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
I wanted to ask you, how did you get into doing voice acting?
I was lucky enough that Mike Judge was. I'd done some Saturday morning cartoons prior to doing King of the Hill, but I was lucky enough that Mike Judge was a news radio fan, knew that I had done a lot of Southern theater and some Southern TV and film, and said, "Why don't you come in and try one of these guys?" And I ended up auditioning for Dale first, which was just wrong. That was the right conspiracy guy for that. And then he said to try Bill. And we had done it on we were doing it over the phone. So he was auditioning, on a speakerphone. And I finished doing my stuff. And he said, "Well, that's about as funny as that can be." Luckily, he gave me the job.
Casey Kasem, and I love the guy, plays the part of Shaggy in Scooby-Doo.
Absolutely, for many, many years.
And when you're talking with him, as I do often, and then you listen to Shaggy, you go, "Can't be the same guy."
Yeah,
it is amazing.
It is
the
incredible.
Art that you folks have.
Well, we just—I think there's a lot of character guys who've got a corral of, characters that they're strong with, and they try to put those out.
Next up, let's go to Las Vegas, Nevada. Elaine, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi guys. How you doing?
Good. Pretty good.
With a big fat grin on my face, I want to ask Steve in there, how many red stapler jokes do you get?
I'll tell you, I see them almost every day, no matter where I go, and I'm thrilled. If you bring one out to me, I'll sign it up for you.
Seriously, because the big story on that one was because of the movie Office Space. That's the reason why the staple company actually started making those darn things. That's
people started to request them when the movies started getting like a cult status after a couple of years, and they just got so many requests they finally had to make one. Although the one they made is not the exact model of the one in the film.
Well, you're popular among us computer geek types, and I appreciate all that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You don't look like Milton.
Thank God.
You know, so I'd assume if you're walking down the street, do you get recognized at all?
I do, strangely. And I ask them the same question. I said, do I look like Milton to you? And they say, no, they've seen me in other stuff. I get recognized a fair amount. It's mostly for Office Space. A lot of it, the Jimmy James from News Radio.
Right.
And a lot of it from Dodgeball.
I get nailed a lot when I'm going through the TSA folks at the airport.
Absolutely.
And they get your boarding pass.
Right with you, brother.
They look at your name, they go, are you? And then you're stuck.
And then that's it. It's like, yeah.
And then the people behind you go, would you just move him out of the way?
I don't care what you do, move.
Next up, let's go to George in Houston, Texas. First-time caller. George, thanks for calling.
Yes, I just wanted to know what's the experience level you need to do voiceovers in movies?
Well, good question.
It's a good question. It's very, very tough to break into. I was able to break into it because I'd done television before film, but you'll find more and more that stars and recognizable names are doing voices now because the studios don't want to take a chance on an unknown. So it's I got to tell you, it's incredibly difficult to break in.
I got a friend who moved from St. Louis to here. Mark Rawlings is his name, and he's doing some voice work starting up in great radio talent from his St. Louis days.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just starting, Stephen, to get his jobs. But it's tough.
Oh, yeah. As you know, Maurice LaMarche does 99% of them, and other four guys do. And there's
Don LaFontaine, God rest his soul.
God rest his soul. Yeah. All those guys, they're the big five. But, you're lucky if you can break in. You really are.
Next up, we go to Oklahoma. Dan, east of the Rockies. Take it away, Daniel.
Yes, sir. I was just wondering, when you pick a script, is it strictly vocabulary, or what goes into determining what kind of script you would necessarily pick up or feel comfortable with?
No, that's a good question. Mostly for me at this stage of my career, it's about the writing of the script. I think I've been lucky enough to be on a couple of shows that have been excellently written. At this point, to me, it's a waste of time to do anything that isn't, I think, challenging for me and really well written. So it's all on the page. Otherwise, you're standing there with your mouth open. So for me, it's not the character. It's not the size. I mean, it's not necessarily the size of the character or the size of the role. It's the interest level that I would have within the piece that is well written.
Stephen, who picks the specific voice for the character that you play? Do you have to give, let's say, the director an option of three or four different voice characters, and he says, I like that one?
Sure, absolutely. If you're offered a job and they know that your work, that you do different voices, they'll go in and say, let's do a test of this voice. And you'll do three, like you said, maybe three or four, and you'll get adjusted and directed by the director in the session before you start the session. That happens a lot in the Saturday morning cartoon stuff. How do you want to do this villain or this bad guy? But if you're doing a straight audition for, say, a new animated movie, you'll come up with it yourself first, bring it in, show it to them, and if they like that one, then you'll try some stuff around that.
You ever get tired of people coming up to you saying, hey, can you do this for me?
Well, sometimes you feel like, you know, a monkey doing tricks, you know. It's like, I do this for a living.
But you seem like a very approachable, nice guy.
Oh, sure, of course. And you're happy to do it within reason, you know. If you get it like 100 times a day, then it's going to be a little much.
Yeah. So if you go out to dinner here in L.A., they leave you alone?
Pretty much so. I think people are really respectful out here, as they are on the East Coast in New York as well. They know you're working for a living, and if you're having dinner, you got so much amount of time, and they've been very respectful here.
Stephen, invited back here anytime you want, my friend.
Thank you, George. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You take care of yourself. Stephen Root, you know the things he has done. Just an absolutely delightful person. I'll be back in just a moment. our special edition report that continues now, the swine flu scare. A number of guests are joining us throughout the night. I'll be back.